Welcome in and welcome back to episode 46 of Bullpen Games. I'm Aaron, he's Nate, and tonight we get our GM headgear on and make some trades, or at least speculate on the deadline that's just 50 days away for Major League Baseball. Which teams are in dire straits in their bullpens? What relievers could be available? Who matches up perfectly and what that means for your fantasy teams? Of course, being episode 46, we will hop into the time machine, set coordinates for 1946. A great year for Cardinals fans, Nate.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
Great year. Another World Series. But tonight is a special night for Nate and I because we are joined by a very special guest, one unlike any other we've had on Bullpen Games thus far, that's for sure. Sure, you can find him on Twitter, inciting his Razzball boss, Gray Albright, or carving up some fantasy deliciousness in his written works over at Pitcher List. But Nate, our special guest, he's a perfect fit for our show template. He's an actual real-life baseball historian, published and all. Not like us pretenders. So listeners and viewers, welcome in Mr. Blair Williams. What's up, Blair?
How are you doing? I'm really happy to be here, be part of the community, and I'm really hoping to learn a lot about relief pitchers tonight because I am just as clueless as everybody else. And whether it be 1946 or 2021, I think, you know, it brings continuity between the time spans, and we all cannot figure out what to do about the bullpen.
Yeah, they had no idea in 46 either.
No, the Red Sox led the league in saves as a team with 20, and their top reliever got 9 of them. So just like, you know, the majority of the other teams, we're talking 50% of the total workload goes to one person, and then it's a hodgepodge of the who knows what.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's super cool to be here. I appreciate it. I'm hoping to learn. I'm hoping to stare at my stats that I so thoroughly curated to try and bring out some sort of, you know, sanity to what's going on in the bullpens and hopefully not mention any of my teams that are completely crashing.
Oh, I mean, we pick on our own teams the entire show. So you'll hear some references to poor performances from our teams. Blair, something that I mentioned in our open, and I just want everyone to know because I think that something Nate and I are proud of on this show is bringing about that piece of baseball history in each episode and kind of trying to find some things. I know that you are, and I wasn't kidding, you're a published author. You wrote, you know, a pretty detailed piece on baseball and the history of baseball in Japan. If you want to just kind of plug that and let our listeners and viewers know where they can find it.
So my previous career was as a academic where I earned my PhD in East Asian history. I finished both my dissertation in 2018 and then my book in 2019, and it was published last year. It's called Making Japan's National Game, A Cultural History of Baseball in Japan. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it on, there's a link in my Twitter bio. And hopefully it's coming to, you know, local bookshops. Basically, long story short, the pandemic hurt a lot of presses. So if you can buy physical books from your bookstore down the street, do that if you can. Otherwise, of course, Amazon, whatever you can, supports me, supports the community. And it's the first history of baseball in Japan from its inception all the way up until the first World Baseball Classic.
Nate, what was the last book you wrote?
I wrote a 3-page book for my niece, a children's book. And I've never written a book. I'm sorry. I'm lying. I'm lying on live TV. She could be watching.
I was going to say, and it's still sitting on her shelf, and she's never read it because it was nonsense.
It's right behind you. It's that book up in the top left, your left one. There you go. Yeah, that's it right there.
Yeah, no. Probably not. Anyway, let's roll into 46. I got a couple cool stories before we talk about some individual pitchers, and let's start with Pete Reiser. Pete Reiser of the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1946 stole 34 bases. In that 34 bags, he stole 7 times home plate. Wow. Home plate 7 times in one season, and that was the record up until 1969. when Rod Carew tied him with 7 steals at home plate. Rod Carew, 7 steals at home plate in 1969. Weird, weird little funky stat there. On September 15th, 1946, the Dodgers and the Cubs were playing game 2 of their doubleheader, and the entire field was invaded by gnats. And so they could not finish the game after 5 innings. The Dodgers won 2-0. Of course, those bugs came back in 2007. Remember Jabba Chamberlain swatting those things on the mound, Indians and Yankees in the ALDS. So bugs in baseball history for sure, not just Bugs Bunny. And then on Friday, August 9th, 1946, every single game of the Major League Baseball slate was played under the lights. The first full night slate. If FanDuel was around, they would have gone crazy for that full 8-game slate. So, FanDuel, you were a little behind the times, I guess.
Yeah, about 75 years.
About 75 years. One guy who was for a long time in baseball was a guy that I found here in 1946, Barnacle Bill Postel, P-O-S-E-D-E-L. 8 years in the minors, came up at like 30 or 31 years old in 1938, pitched a few decent years, Brooklyn and Boston. Suffered an arm injury in 41 and then enlisted in the Navy, like a lot of the players we've been talking about over the last few episodes. Enlisted in the Navy, served 4 years for our country before returning back to the Braves in 1946. In 1946, Barnacle Bill made 19 appearances with a 6.99 ERA. Why am I talking about a guy who threw 19 and through 19 appearances had almost a 7 ERA? Well, he actually went on to become one of the greatest scouts in the history of baseball. We never mentioned scouts here, but he made his mark on a young staff back then in 1946, so much so that they gave him a job as a scout. And he's actually given credit for putting together the dominant A's pitching staff of the early 70s, found Catfish Hunter, and put together some really good pitching staffs for the A's, really good teams. So Barnacle Bill, he passed away in California in his 80s. Great career, not so much as a pitcher, but as a scout. Blair, you have scouted baseball for fantasy, baseball for your book. Have you ever looked into the 40s for Major League Baseball before tonight?
Yeah. So the very long story short is I was really interested in learning about global baseball history. And so, of course, you know, I'm coming from the Japanese perspective and trying to represent that of Japan. And one day I had an email in my account asking for people to write about Cuban baseball players. And so I ended up writing a chapter for a book that's available through University of Arkansas Press called Twin Cities Sports History. And it's about Tony Oliva, and that's pretty cool and everything. But what's really interesting to learn, of course, is you have to go back to the 40s to learn how Major League Baseball was interfering in Cuban baseball and trying to look around basically to control the whole world of baseball. And of course, you know, we're in 1946. You had the 1945 episode previously. We've got the end of World War II going on there. Obviously, that's a huge thing for Japan because they're completely decimated. Basically, it was a straight up, publicly stated intent to destroy Japan's military and will to ever create war again. And so their cities are decimated, and a lot of times they basically the same day that the emperor announced the defeat of the soldiers, where they lay down their arms. You know, it's a very technical term when you're a historian. They technically did not want to surrender. They wanted to lay down their arms. The next day they started to go out in the rubble and ask to play baseball again. And so, I mean, it's always about the story of the enduring human spirit. And what I kind of found on the American side is I looked in 1946 on Baseball Reference, and I kind of sorted by games finished, and I ran into this guy named Earl Caldwell, and he led the league in games finished. And like I said, this is kind of a learning experience. I'm not a relief pitcher, you know, great mind or anything. I'm not a relief pitcher Einstein. So people out there who want to learn about baseball players from a previous time, you can go to Sabre, Society of American baseball research, sabr.org. And you can look up basically a biography of any player who has basically played. And again, there's only 20,000 players. So it is a huge undertaking to do this encyclopedia. But I found Earl Campbell, and Earl Campbell had a sort of a long career. He played well into his 40s, started in the 20s. And basically, he was one of those guys that this is a big thing when learning about baseball history is it's a job for some people. Of course, there's the luminaries back then, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig. There are some other people who just needed a job. And so it would be anything like Earl Campbell. He's working at a cannery and he's also doing baseball. And particularly what's interesting is to follow a lot of the Latino baseball players who are literally circling around the United States to the Caribbean and the Negro Leagues, and they're making all these, you know, different points of money. And so Earl Caldwell, he has this kind of weird career where in the 1930s, his arm starts to feel really sore, and he's stating in his biography that I'm reading here, his arm basically felt like a toothpick when he's out there throwing. And so you can actually see on Baseball Reference, like, he'll pitch for 2 or 3 years, take time off, come back for another year, 2, 3 years, time off, and so forth. And it's just like a part-time job for him. He keeps coming back. And so he switches from a starter to reliever. And particularly, he's coming in, you know, sort of 1945. We're seeing him throw over 100 innings. He's 40 years old at that point, I believe. I'm just quickly flipping my screens. Yeah, 1945, 40 years old. 1946, the time we're talking about, so he finishes 37 games. He was really concerned that he's not going to, look himself. So he wants to save face. You know, he's full on reliever because he can extend his career. He can pitch a little bit longer. And he goes on to pitch until 1948 at the ripe old age of 43, where you can see that he's totally bottoming out. He makes 10 innings. So within 5 years, he goes from 105 innings, 90 innings down to 10. 43-year-old, especially in the 1940s, just can't keep it going. But I just wanted to kind of use him as a way to talk through not only how to look up players if anybody's interested, but also just sort of that, different mentality that was going on back then. And so I know that Nate's got a super awesome way of telling stories, and I'm super excited to hear what he's got to say about his player.
I will back up with what you just said, in that we have become research. If I spent as much time in high school and college researching that I do for these players for the 1920s, 30s, and 40s,
we'd have better jobs, Nate.
We would have better jobs. I might have that book that you're talking about. Now, it might not be great, but it would be a little bit closer. But yeah, 1946 was, you know, and you mentioned the Cardinals. So the Cardinals win over the Red Sox. That was the Enos Slaughter, the Mad Dash game that they recall. And there, I looked into that and found out there was pieces of that I didn't really even know happened, is that the left fielder in that game who was retrieving it, who should have been in left field, the inning before, tore his hamstring running to third base. So he was out of the game. So then the fill-in, who has lesser arm situation, the whole the defensive liability, if you will, came in, and that's kind of how he scored. There was an intriguing situation in that World Series, though, that I found. Obviously, Ted Williams played for the Red Sox, and Ted Williams, we all know who that is. But the Boudreaux shift in 1946 was actually established. Now, granted, 1920s, Cy Wilson is credited with the defensive shift to begin with. But realistically, Boudreaux is the one who's getting credit for it, because he was in a doubleheader between the Indians and the Red Sox. Lou Boudreaux, the manager, decided to move everybody over and basically cover the line. And so he did that in a doubleheader against Ted Williams. Rumor has it Ted Williams saw that, had never seen that before, stepped out of the batter's box, looked over at Boudreaux, smirked, and ripped one opposite field double, and gracefully bowed when he got to second base, basically saying, hey, well, the Cardinals did that same thing in 1946 in the World Series, held them to like a 220 average. Stan Musial actually only hit like 220 the same World Series. So it was definitely a game not of those superstars, but of others. But in 1946, the one thing I want to dig around for a player, there was not even just a baseball player in the major leagues that I found. I actually found a person who goes by the nickname Iron Woman. Her name is Connie Wisniewski. Connie Wisniewski is this lady right there. She was
for those pitcher. Of you who are listening.
Nate, oh yeah, listening. You can't
slid
see
to the side. Yeah, this is great visuals for our podcast.
Correct. Listeners. Yes. Imagine a statuesque 5'6" right-handed pitcher, female in a skirt, from the American, the Professional Women's Baseball League, who that year for the Grand Rapids Chicks, by the way, not exactly the. I don't think that would apply too well in today's day and age for their team names. But regardless, she in that season was not a reliever, nor did she ever need a reliever for her games. She pitched 40 complete games without ever leaving the mound that year. Wow. Following up a 1945 season that consisted of a 0.85 ERA and bumped it up to 0.96. In 1946, they had this rule. It's crazy. Just the numbers are uncanny. But so before it was underhand. In 1946, they allowed to more of a sidearm position. I'm not going to demonstrate because people listening won't know what I'm talking about. But you know what a sidearm is. And they developed the sidearm delivery. Well, she was a windmill pitcher. Her shoulder did not actually do well. So that first year in 1946, it was the beginning of the end for her, unfortunately. But that's also because they wanted to hearken the league to Major League Baseball. They expanded the corners. They lengthened the mound. They made it definitely not conducive to a pitcher's game. It became more offensive. And unfortunately, Connie Wisniewski could no longer go on as a pitcher, so she decided to do what all great players do. She became a hitter. She's the first Shohei Ohtani of women's baseball, and she went on to play in 4 All-Star games as an outfielder. Connie Wisniewski, Iron Woman. 1946.
Connie, Earl, Barnacle Bill. Hats off to all three of you.
Exactly.
1946. I can't wait until we got 23. I let Nate ramble every time the Cardinals win a World Series on one of these episode numbers. I'm going to be so insufferable on episode 69 when I finally get to talk about a championship. I think Nate will probably be sick. Well, I'm going to have to host alone.
I don't hate the Mets. I really don't. I'm happy for you. I want you to do well.
I mean, I wasn't there. It was 1969.
Exactly.
I wasn't there. I am here now. We are going to talk about something that's coming up soon, and it's the Major League Baseball trade deadline, 50 days away. And we know that things are going to happen. Teams are going to make moves. It's always way more hype than substance, but let's start the hype. Blair, when you were kind of taking your perusal of the Major League Baseball bullpens, did any of them jump out at you and scream, hey, we need to make a move, let's make the move?
First I gotta say I'm totally ready to come on your 87th podcast for the Twins.
There you go.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
We'll pencil you in.
You know, a couple years from now, just let me know, you know, I'll be here and I'll ruin the Twins too. So, you know, San Francisco Giants, you're so kind to let me go first, so I'm going to take the easiest one. San Francisco Giants, of course, are doing pretty well in the standings, somewhat unexpectedly, and they've got one of the worst bullpens in Major League Baseball. Basically, they're going – I'm just going to summarize for you what you've said previous episodes, is so many teams are going with closer by committee. There's no 1A or 1B sort of closer right there. San Francisco Giants rank third to the last in Major League Baseball in reliever WAR right now, wins above replacement. Their bullpen put together has a 4.30 ERA combined with a 4.24 FIP. So there's no luck. I mean, it's not good. So we're definitely looking at some people who should be doing better right now. We've seen kind of a combination of Jake McGee. Who would have thought that 2021 would have brought Jake McGee back? But hey, you know, cool. We're happy about that. And of course, the identical twin to the Twins somewhat closer, Taylor Rogers, his identical twin, Tyler Rogers, who throws in, just speaking of underhand kind of submarine stuff, he throws that really wonky slider that actually, you know, rises and goes up. And of course we see it on Twitter all the time. And I'm guilty of this too. I don't look at a lot of relievers. I just kind of grab whoever's great for saves at the time. And so I've got Tyler Rogers in my TGFBI, and I finally load up the Fangraphs, and I've got everything copied out, and I look, and he's got a 4.26 K per nine with a 31 innings. Like, I mean, that is awful. I kid you not, like, one of us could go out there and nearly compete with that. You know, Williams Astudillo, the Twins catcher, could nearly compete with that. So Tyler Rogers is sort of the de facto quote unquote ace, because Jake McGee's kind of been on and off the IL. But you know, again, they're sharing. They got 20 saves between themselves, and it's a nasty bullpen, and not nasty in a good way, nasty in a bad way. The nearest competition. You know, we got things like Matt Whistler, who again was on the Twins, and you know, I mean, yeah, we're just shoving all our people over there. Matt Whistler's got 20 innings, 12 K per nine. You know, if I'm making him a starter, you know, my starting rankings over at Razzball are heavy on K minus walk percentage. Matt Whistler looks great at that, but in terms of being a reliever, he's got 6.05 ERA, 4.07 FIP. That is not what you need out of a reliever. You need a reliever who is not going to allow hits, who's not going to put people on base. And the San Francisco Giants are just looking dismal as heck for a team that's trying to compete against the Dodgers.
Yeah, kind of like the surprise team out west. No one really could see them competing with San Diego and LA, but here they are. And so definitely a fascinating team to watch coming up into the trade deadline. Nate, who are you like keeping your closest eye on for a move, a relevant move in the back end of their bullpen?
I think it's the Braves. I think the Braves actually make a move. And it's not to say that they don't, between Will Smith and Chris Martin, they, as a team, as a whole, their relief corps. I mean, they have a shared 4.78 ERA. I think that, and we'll get to who I think might go there, but I could see them being that team to bring in that ninth inning arm. Be nice to move Will Smith more into a lefty situation. Hasn't been great for Minter. Minter's had his ups and downs. That's the thing, is with a lot of these teams we've talked about. I mean, granted, we're still only really 9 weeks into the season. Our sample size is, oh, he was bad for 2 weeks. He was good for 3 weeks, bad, and that takes up the whole season. So it's hard to kind of pigeonhole one specific team, but as a whole, just in generalities, their bullpens are being taxed pretty heavily. That's what we're going to have to start finding too, is I think workload is going to really play into this quite a bit. And look at total pitches thrown and who has the most. We were talking about, you know, Blair with San Francisco. I mean, they have, you know, second most saves. Atlanta's right up there as well. So I'm gonna say Atlanta. What about you, Aaron? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I can definitely see that happening in Atlanta. Even as a Mets fan, I don't think we're gonna run away and hide in the East. So some of these teams are gonna try to make their run: Phillies, Braves, even maybe the Nationals. Another division that I don't think anyone's gonna run away and hide in is the AL East, and Toronto. Of course, we have ad nauseum highlighted this Blue Jays bullpen throughout the season, heading into the season, the Yates injury early on, the Merriweather freaking like Fab Fest that happened in week zero of Fab, and all these things. But I think Toronto believes that they have a chance to compete with the Bostons, the Yankees, the Rays, and you know, their lineup is certainly there. They've gotten some really good starting pitching performances, but they really haven't found. Well, let's just take a look quick at their bullpen. They need help. Tyler Chatwood, a guy I liked, who had a phenomenal start to the season and was pitching in some high leverage situations for Toronto. He had a 4-game stretch about a week and a half ago where he allowed 11 earned runs and 4 innings pitched. That will get you to the 5th inning mop up duty real fast. That'll keep you away from those tight situations real quick, no matter how good your first little stretch was. Rafael Dolis, you know, decent arm, but the guy can't throw strikes. He's walked at least one in 7 of his last 10 appearances. So, you know, you just basically stand up there and get a free pass. And now Dolis has got himself in trouble And that's kind of been his MO throughout his time with Toronto. So that leaves us with the last man standing, Jordan Romano. And again, he's really just the last man standing. He's not like this locked in closer that that I think people believe he is. He's got 5 career saves today on June 10th, 2021. He has 5 career saves. So if I'm the general manager or the manager of a team that really believes they've got a chance to make a run in the playoffs, I don't think, you know, unless you're really into the Astros, I don't see a team in the American League that's just going to be like unbeatable. So I think American League teams are going to lick their chops here and say, let's get in the playoffs. Let's get some veterans in the back end of our bullpen to get the big outs, because we all know how baseball works now. It's get as many outs as you can, scramble in from your starting pitchers, and then piece together every 3 batters the rest of the way. That's baseball. And so I think Toronto is definitely most certainly going to be in the market for someone. And I'll tell you about that someone in just a second. But let's start with you, Nate. We'll bounce back real quick. You know, it's nice to say a team needs someone, but these relievers need to be available. So who's your top guy that could be available here coming up?
My top guy's I think Raisel Iglesias. I just have to assume the Angels are going to be sellers. And he's free agent at the end of the season. I think he's the best. He's the most veteran closer. He has the longest resume, I'd say, to take over somebody. For me, that's my number one.
Blair, you got somebody who's kind of sitting out there somewhere, and we're like just going to wait and not going to be, I don't know, he doesn't have to be something like not a hot take or anything, but just like a guy who's going to be a nice piece for the back end, might be mixed in for some saves here for fantasy players.
For fantasy players, I mean, we're going to be looking at one Rishad Rodriguez, mm-hmm, of the Pittsburgh Pirates, because so I was on the Fantasy Six Pack preseason looking at the NL East, and I mean, it's the Pirates closer. Nobody's thinking about Rodriguez.
Right.
He's that low-hanging fruit that people are going to be able to grab at the end of a draft, because they want the closers for the top-ranking teams, which, of course, ended up being Mark Melanson and Alex Reyes. We've got Richard Rodriguez of the Pirates, who's totally acceptable. He's got 7 saves. You know what? He's got a 1.85 ERA, and I think there's something to be said about good ERAs with, you know, the ability to get a save as well. Because I'm looking through the Raswell Player Raider right now, and a lot of the players who have really high save count also have really bad peripherals. That's hard to say. I mean, like Matt Barnes, you know, he's 6th in saves, basically. I should say he's tied for 5th. And he's actually negative value in ERA. Ian Kennedy is on the injured list right now. He's tied for 8th in saves, actually. Again, negative ERA value, negative WHIP value. And then, you know, somebody like Richard Rodriguez is actually positive value in ERA, WHIP, and surprisingly even wins. You know, so Richard Rodriguez can kind of sneak in there. But, of course, the problem is the Pirates are awful. I mean, they're on pace to win, you know, 60 games, something like that. I mean, they're 11.5 games back. And did I say NL East before? Because yeah, they're NL Central, and I mean, it's just so, they're so bad, people don't even remember where they are. And I mean, it's Ke'Bryan Hayes, and that's it. So a lot of people are thinking that Richard Rodriguez is going to get shipped out. There's not a lot of talent in the Pirates farm system. Sort of like the Royals we're playing. You know, the Royals are doing a little bit better, but you could see that the Royals actually brought in a bunch of relievers to sort of see, like, maybe they can make one stick and trade it off at the trade deadline, because they got Bobby Witt coming up. They got Asilasi coming up. They're going to be a competitor in the very near future. So if they could take some of these crappy relievers, turn them into something, ship them out mid-season, hey, that's cool. You know what? If you want Josh Dalmont, there's your freebie right there, Josh Dalmont too. But Richard Rodriguez, he's the kind of guy that is probably going to be probably, you know what, 20% chance, 30% chance moving from the Pirates, because the Pirates need literally anything. And he's got a 1.85 ERA. That's something that's sellable and something that people will pay for.
Yeah, I think we've had Rodriguez circled as a guy who could be moved out of, you know, vacate saves type of situation. Not that there are many saves to be had in Pittsburgh, like you mentioned. But hopefully if and when he does get moved, there's some clarity. There's not much clarity in many bullpens, but there's some clarity from his new team about what his role might be. One guy that we don't take a lot of victory laps here, but we might have been the only two guys in fantasy on Craig Kimbrel this year. And we cited some very small samples at the end of last season, which were incredible. I mean, just, you know, like a 15 K to nine, you know, K per nine, and he wasn't walking anybody, and the fastball was kind of riding through the zone, and he was getting swings and misses at, you know, Craig Kimbrel rate over his last, like, I don't think it was like 5 2/3 innings, something really such, something so small, but everyone was citing something that wasn't that much bigger, like 14 innings pitched of bad Craig Kimbrel was so much worse than 5 or 6 innings of tremendous Craig Kimbrel. And Kimbrel has been, I mean, he's been really good. And it's weird because, like, the Cubs are hanging around. And I think that the feeling is that the Cubs are, or we're hoping that they could head in a different direction from this kind of, like, blow up the thing that worked. We gave it a couple runs, and now it's time to move on from, you know, KB and, you know, maybe Rizzo or, you know, whatever, you know, just kind of move on from that class of guys, the Haywards and stuff. And Kimbrel was kind of lumped in there as, like, here's a piece that they can move, who hasn't been good. So if he's good, he's going to be off the team really quick. Well, he's been really freaking good. 15 saves, 41 Ks in 25 innings pitched. So that's elite level reliever stuff. That's like top of the line reliever stuff. And they've got some guys behind him that have pitched well themselves, Chaffin amongst others, who could, you know, probably slide right into that role and be, you know, similarly effective if the Cubs don't want to quite kiss the season goodbye. But I think the one thing that we should mention when we mentioned Craig Kimbrel's availability is his contract. He's got an option in 2022 for $16 million. He's getting paid $16 million this year. And he's got a club or vesting option for 2022. And the vesting option, he's got no chance to hit because of COVID. He needed to have 110 games finished in the two seasons combined and 55 games finished this season. So that's out. There's no way he's going to reach that mark after last season. So he can't automatically kick in that option. So he just has a $1 million buyout for next year, which I think weighs heavily when you're looking at what kind of player you're going to take back in a trade at the trade deadline. What kind of commitment do you need to make to them? And, you know, Kimbrel's experienced and he's having a hot year. So I think that's a little out of left field because the Cubs have been good and Kimbrel's been tremendous. But I think I believe that the Cubs still want to head in a different direction, Theo out the door, and, you know, the new folks want to put their stamp on the team themselves. And I think sly move would be to move a reliever, like you mentioned, Blair. They wanted just a reliever because they're just relief pitchers, and next year, you know, means nothing. And so if you can get a hot reliever out the door and get a nice little building piece, I think that's something that could happen with the trade for Kimbrel. So
I want to ask you guys, there's a list that I have here of impending free agents on teams that situations will say that I feel like they have a chance to get moved. Show me a thumbs up or a thumbs down if you think these are going to be moved, both you two collectively. Brad Hand.
No.
You don't think he's going to move?
No.
He's going to stay in Washington? Okay.
Hanging around.
So I said Raisel Iglesias. What about Daniel Hudson?
Yeah, I mean, I can't see why not. He's just a guy.
Okay, both. The Ian Kennedy, Jolie Rodriguez. Yep, both agree there. Here's the one that I really am leading up to, and this is Blair more directed towards you. Hansel Robles. I mean, right? They're so far out right now. They could easily get back into it. I say easily. I do that for optimism because we like to cater to our guests to give you hope and leave here feeling warm and fuzzy. But realistically, I mean, what a great option for somebody. And I'm thinking for maybe a certain St. Louis team would love to see someone like a Hansel Robles come here personally.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm looking at his contract status. Looks like he's a free agent coming up this year. So he's yay, he gets paid. That's awesome. But at the same time, he's had a lost 2 years. I mean, 2020, everybody was lost. We all know that from if people don't know who I am, you know, I'm the starting pitching ranker guy at Razzball. And I've been there, you know, since 2020, 2021. Pitchers are lost except for like the top 10, basically. There's a lot of pitchers who came in last year out of shape, out of training, and we can kind of throw 2020 out the door for the people who admitted it. And you could easily tell a couple others were not training well. In 2021, we saw a lot of pitchers come in despite the fact that pitchers were better than ever. Starters were coming in and, again, still pitching fewer innings basically than ever. 2020 was the least amount of innings pitched by starting pitchers ever. 2021 was, again, pretty low, and so a lot of relievers are coming in, weren't expecting this level of work. I mean, Hansel Robles is already at 27 innings in the Twins pitching, and again, we're just entering June. Mm-hmm. Not really. I mean, in theory, that's what he wants because he wants to be that workhorse. He's the guy who 2 years ago was the Angels' closer. In theory, he wants that, but he's walking nearly 6/9. His expected ERA is 4.31. Expected FIP 470. For me, you know, my big thing is looking at K-BB and Sierra. K-BB 9.8%. I mean, that's like oof.
Alex Colome range right there.
Yeah. And is Sierra's 4.56. There's nothing there. Absolutely, any team could reclaim him and work on him. So yeah, Cardinals can get him. He's going to be cheap, but is he going to be worth it? Who knows? And just like you said, Nate, Alex Colome. I think Alex Colome, you know, is one of those guys who's on a contract right now, and he's got an option next year. I was heavy, quote unquote, heavy on Alex Colome because again, I'm Razzball, I'm Sagnoff, Saves ain't got no face. I aim low when it comes to closers. Alex Colome has one of the, you know, top closing rankings of the past couple of years. And he came in and he boffed it for the Twins. You know, just a transition right there from Hansel Robles to Alex Colome. The Twins are just, I mean, they're in the bottom of the AL Central. Again, they're a team that couldn't figure out if they wanted to re-sign Nelson Cruz or not. It's like, I mean, again, I'm a Twins fan. I've written Twins history before. We've tortured Torrey Hunter. We've tortured so many great players in our history. And basically, we're doing it again. Nelson Cruz is the face of the Bomba Squad. We could barely even bring him back. We brought in Hansel Robles, Alex Colome, crashed him to the ground. Basically, so I see them as having a fair amount of chance of leaving and going being more productive somewhere else. As you look at Alex Colome, I mean, what, he's 32. He's 32. He's one of the top relievers in the past few years. He was, you know, starting reliever for the White Sox last year, 12 saves in a shortened season. He's got a lot left in the tank. He needs a different scenery.
Yeah. You just spot on with the Twins bullpen. We've covered this bullpen just yes. as much as we've covered the Toronto bullpen, And none of it has been good. You could have thrown 50 darts at 30 pictures and you would have missed on all 30. There's just not a guy who has grabbed that any role, forget about the closer role. There's just not a guy who's grabbed really any role and said, "Hey, you can count on me today." Just watching that Twins bullpen from afar. So anyway, it's nice to know who needs something. It's nice to know who's available, but someone's got to make the match. So Blair, play matchmaker, get your crystal ball, Nate's going to write this down, and I have a feeling you're going to nail it. Reliever who's going to become available, team that needs the reliever, match made. Who you got?
You're taking notes on this. You're taking notes on
always
me
does.
To hold me accountable. And hopefully you screenshot this and you'll put it out there because, you know, apparently that's all I do now is make memes.
exactly.
I'm going to keep it fresh and new and find a new person to think about. Rafael Montero in Seattle seems to be a little bit obsolete. Kendall Graveman, although kind of dealing with that, you know, the COVID thing, Montero has become no longer the closer in the Seattle, and Seattle's awful. They have basically the worst offense in Major League Baseball. They really don't need a closer. Rafael Montero's still arbitration eligible. So there's a lot of value into that. We can see that he's still, you know, acceptable. I mean, he's got 7 saves on the year. K per nine near 8, walk per nine 2.5 is respectable. Expected ERA 3.06. Just because I love putting in Sierra because it lets us know if people are getting hit hard or not. 3.60. That's cool. Called and swinging strike percentage 26%. It's acceptable, way down. So I think he's going to get traded. Where do I think he's going to get traded to? Of course, I think he's getting traded to the Twins because I want the Twins to actually be, you know, winning. But, you know, hey, he's probably going to be end up going somewhere, something like, you know, that they do need it. The Giants, again, they need help in the bullpen. The Athletics need help in the bullpen. And basically anywhere, if that's my prediction, Giants or Athletics, you know, right down to California, quick train ride. Let Rafael Montero go back and be useful.
Nate, before you go, I'm gonna be boring because I talked about the Blue Jays and I talked about Craig Kimbrel, and I'm gonna put them together. I just think it's so obvious that Toronto needs someone with closing experience, and again, I'm gonna harp on the fact that I don't see a team in the American League that looks like world beaters. They haven't appeared yet. I'm like I said, unless you truly believe in the Astros now that the pitching staff's gotten a little healthier. Unless outside the Astros, I don't see a team that is going to just run through this AL, and Toronto's right there. And they're like 6 games out, in June. And that's, you know, they're above 500. They've played in, you know, 2 different states already. They're going to play in, you know, maybe another country later on this year. And, you know, they got a 500 home record, but they've played really well on the road, to keep them over 500. And so it's kind of like, I can just envision that Toronto team just getting behind this crazy season that, you know, everyone else's 2020 was nuts. And now 2021's head back to normal, except for Toronto. You know, they've had the biggest shakeup here, and they've survived. We're at trade deadline time. They've had everything go wrong for their bullpen that could possibly go wrong for their bullpen. And yet here they are sitting just 6 games out above 500 and in need of that guy at the back end with some experience that can, you know, close out these important games that they're going to have coming through the summer. And so I really, truly, honestly believe that Craig Kimbrel is going to end up in a Blue Jays uniform. They've got the young starting pitchers. They got, you know, plenty of them in the minors. And I think one of them can get it done for Kimbrel. That guy goes over, becomes like a second or third starter for Chicago for a little while, and both teams win. And so that's my match. What you got?
So I might say stole my thunder because I can still say someone going to the Blue Jays because that seems pretty simple. But I don't want to do that. I want to change it all up completely. And just because I really thought I'm going to use a combination of both, Blair's choice on Richard Rodriguez. I don't have the R roll for the sweet tongue. What, I don't know what you call it.
I can't do that either. That's a genetic thing, right? Like
I'll say Rodriguez and I'll do it. And then I can't do it 10 times in a row. And I feel like twice. I'm straining and I'm going to give myself a hernia every time I say it. And I don't feel like saying Richard Rodriguez is worth getting a hernia.
If you go to the ER for a sprained tongue, this podcast is canceled.
Exactly. But I will send him to another team that does have a need to get some safe innings. The San Francisco Giants, we talked about, you know, the two things right there is that number one, they're injured. Caleb Bargar's hurt right now. Reyes Maranta's hurt. The taxing of that bullpen collectively on Tyler Rogers. Yeah, Tyler Rogers. That's his name.
Yeah. Yep. We got it. You got it right. And you didn't even think about it. That was awesome.
No, exactly. Oh, I thought about it a lot. And Jake McGee is crazy amount. I mean, I think it's a great match. I feel that there's some of these guys that from a fantasy perspective, we have to have a person go to a team where they will become the closer. And in San Francisco, I think that might be a good fit. I know that that's not the norm. We know Kapler's going to Kapler, and that's the whole thing. But it's Rodriguez's value is good because, like you said, Blair, in the fact that his ERA is solid, whip solid, K solid, gets hit hard a little bit, but that's not a ratio or a thing we have to worry about. And he can jump over to San Francisco and pick up 20 saves throughout the rest of the season. I think that's a possible scenario. So I have Rodriguez to the Giants. You have Craig Kimbrell to the Blue Jays. Blair, you have Rafael Montero to the Twins.
What are the chances we get all three of these right?
Like, what's the chances that all three of them get traded? What's the chance? I mean, I'm thinking one of the three, maybe two. And
it is a good exercise, though, right? It is a good exercise for fantasy players to at least evaluate. Like Blair said, he looked at his team and went, why the hell is Tyler Rogers on my team? Like, mm-hmm. This doesn't make any sense. It can't all just be about saves. Like, you got to have I think if we provide anything, we at least like expand past the guys who provide saves and give you kind of a look at the bullpen in general and the state of it. And so, you know, like, all right, I got bail on this guy. And so if he's got a week with three saves and somebody's like last place in saves in my league and I in a trade league, like, hey, come get Tyler Rogers because, you know more than just the three saves. You know that Tyler Rogers isn't long for that job. So
right.
Those things are important.
And it's not. It's also, I think, important to find out that as we continue on, we talk about these players that might get traded, who the next man up would be. You touched on Kendall Graveman. I think that's a clear-cut one. But Kendall Graveman's a free agent at the end of the season too, which doesn't mean that I don't think they'll move him. I think he's too valuable for them. But – you know, I think you'd be next man up outside of Craig Kimbrell. I mean, who is
Chaffin or you got Ryan Tepera, who's been super good. Really? 29 innings. Yeah. 29 innings, 34 Ks, two ERA and a 0.68 whip. I mean, that's really good, man.
Yeah.
And he got an MVP vote last year.
Yeah.
And then Rich Rodriguez, we've talked about Kyle Crick for the season, but I think Sam Howard is a name to keep in mind. And then just honestly, hopefully, I don't know, Blair, if you listen or have heard our Fab and Five on Sundays, it's a quick 5-minute breakdown of who knows what, basically gamble lottery tickets. And I get the feeling the next couple of weeks will be a lot more interesting than our ho-hum. Hey, we're going to suggest the same.
Yeah, mid-May to mid-June has been pretty kind of lame. It's like the same three relievers for every pen taking a turn each week. And so, but I think, you know, we have 50 days till the trade deadline. And I think things are going to, you know, teams are, you said 9 weeks, we're in like week 10, right? So 10 weeks into the season, teams are, you probably know if you're good or not now, mm-hmm. you know, or at least you have a decent idea if you're good or not now. So, we start really honing in on those bullpens that have not lived up to their team's expectations or vice versa. Bullpens that have overperformed and guys who in those bullpens have overperformed who could be on the move. So look for that down the road, especially like Nate said, a good host that he is plugging our Fab and Five show every Sunday. You can find that on Apple Pods and our YouTube channel. Subscribe. Okay. So Blair, you're not totally off the hook yet. Because we end every one of these episodes with a curveball, because that's just what we do. And I don't know if Nate prepared one,
I did not.
But I've got one.
Yes.
And I'm not sure who to ask it to. So I'll ask it to Blair, but I really think if I asked it to Nate, he'd have no chance. So Blair. And I think Blair's going to get this. What was the president's name in 1992?
In 1992? I mean, so you've got the transition from George W. Bush, I believe, or either Herbert Walker or Walker. George Bush won, going over to William Jefferson Clinton. No, Nate? Clinton, nope. Yes.
I would have agreed with that exact same answer. That's no, what I thought.
His name's the same. Wrong? Yeah, his name's the same as it is today. It's Joe Biden. It was Joe Biden in 1992. It's Joe Biden in 2021. That was his name in 1992.
Oh, geez.
That is his name in 2021.
Boo. So,
yeah, sorry, guys. It's curveball.
Joe. Yes.
Terrible. I'm a two-time dad now. I'm working on the dad joke game. Double dad jokes right there. Double dad.
Yeah, you know, three-time dad, and I'm going to start my own podcast and get to episode 46 just to bring you on and do a three-time dad joke.
Yes. Sign me up. Put me in. Pencil me in. Blair, before we get out of here, please, you do so many awesome things with baseball and fantasy baseball and fantasy sports in general, and you know, you are a treasure that people should go and discover. So let them know where they can discover your treasures.
You can discover my treasures anytime you like. Everywhere Blair on Twitter, and of course any other social media you like. But as the editor of Razzball Baseball and Football, I'm obligated to point out we've got the Razz Bowl coming up. The Razz Bowl is where we take many industry favorites, the quote-unquote pros, and we put them against the fans, the quote-unquote Joes. I do believe that both Nathan, I'm sorry.
Yes, it's a formal tournament. It deserves the formality of the full
formality,
name.
Nathan.
Nate and I started fantasy dating because of the Razz Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to interject that the Razz Bowl basically brought us all together in many different ways. That Nate, I want to call you Fantasy Triage, but and myself all kind of got our start through the Razz Bowl. You know, the momentum was going at different times for all of us in different places, but the Razz Bowl all eventually launched our fantasy careerdoms, so to speak. And I don't want to put words in your mouth. Perhaps there's other things going on, of course, with Jorge. But in many ways that we've kind of met through that, and we've kind of worked through that. And if there are people out there listening right now that you consider yourself a Joe and you think, hey, I could take on those people, I think I'm just as smart as them, because you are just as smart as us. And we want you in, and we want you signing up for the Razz Bowl. So take a look at football.razzball.com. Sign on up. If we're not your style, you know, we got plenty of other places we can help you fit in. We're all connected throughout the fantasy industry, and we're here to help you as part of the community and as a fantasy player. Does not matter if you like our site or not. It certainly helps if you do. But ultimately, we want you as part of the community, and we want you to be along with the ride and having fun with us.
Nate, where can the people get your stuff?
You can find my work on Razzball. I have my weekly head-to-head article released today. Immediately, as it is pretty much proven every week, I have two immediate injuries and blow-ups, so it is the jinxing that does occur with the from pen to paper, or fingers to keyboard, however that works now. And then, you know, here at Bullpen Games and Fab and Five on Sunday. Link, comment, subscribe, whatever the kids are saying now.
That's right. I think they say you got to sub that.
Smash that button.
Smash that sub button, yeah. Right down below. I have no idea. We're old now.
The episode coincides with our age. It gets old. We get older each week.
I can't wait to cut and clip Blair saying you can find my treasures anytime. I cannot wait to pull that from this episode.
meme it to the moon.
To the moon. Yeah, that didn't work for me with BlackBerry, but that's a whole other whole other story for another day. Check out, of course, all of our shows, Bullpen Games. Subscribe on Apple Pods or wherever you listen to podcasts. Check out our YouTube channel. We've our subscribership has grown leaps and bounds each week. So we really would love to have you guys get over there and interact with us in video format. And also, if you don't know, we mentioned in football, you can check out some of my football stuff at Fantasy Pros, writing some featured articles for them over there. And Joey P, shout out. I did some editing for the Fantasy Football 2021 Black Book, and that's out and available on Amazon. So make sure you check that out too. So for Blair, thanks so much for coming on. Nate, as always, I'm Aaron, and stay tuned for Bob with the postgame show.
Postgame show is brought to you by Christ, I can't find it. The hell with it.